Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You know, Hub, I think you hit a great point there.
Hub Arkish.
The Arkish family in pro football media journalism has been around almost as long as the game itself.
670 The Score's NFL Insider.
I could, but I don't really want to argue with you one way or the other. I don't think.
Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly.
I have been quarantining for a really long time. I even made a drink. It's called a quarantini.
You know, Akeem, I guess we all need a lighter moment once in a while these days. And so I think we're probably all wondering what exactly goes into it. How do you make a quarantini?
Hub Arkish, isn't that getting better than this?
Hub Arkish with McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
Tuesday at 4 o'clock, in season, out of season, it's always time to talk some football and whatever else is on his mind with Hub Arkish by way of the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. What's on your mind today, Hub?
Maybe hockey's on his mind. I saw he was enjoying the Hawks the other night as much as any other Hawks fan was.
Hub?
Hey, guys. I have my phone clicking on and off. Basically, yes, I'm thoroughly enjoying the Blackhawks, and no, you don't want to know what's on my mind right now. I have been fighting with Xfinity for the last 36 hours. So it's just a fun time at the Arkish household.
Oh, customer service can be great, can't it?
It's unbelievable. I mean, I had no idea how much they owned our lives, but I have my internet connection has been fixed 3 times and lost 3 times, and I can't do a damn thing.
Yeah, there was a big storm yesterday. They'll get it back for you. Hub, what do you think the impact of the Big Ten and Pac-12 decisions will be going forward, both for college football and the NFL? Like, what do you think we're looking at here in the next couple of news cycles?
Well, you know, I don't know that there is any immediate impact. I mean, it really, to me at least, is inexcusable to put these student athletes at risk. You know, everybody is talking about how horrific it would be if there was no college football season. We're talking about 256 guys who get drafted and probably another, you know what, maybe 1,500 that get signed as undrafted rookie free agents and never, you know, most of them never make teams. And so that less than 2,000 is a tiny portion of the tens of thousands who play on these teams, you know? And so everybody is kind of viewing this through the lens of, oh my God, what's it going to do to the draft and what's going to do to the NFL? That's not the point, I don't think. I mean, does anybody really want to watch a college football game in an empty stadium? You know, at the risk of young men and women, for that matter, who are working on the sidelines and coaching staffs and other people getting seriously ill. So I don't really understand why there is a great debate about this. To me, it would be inexcusable to just go ahead and play and say, let's limit the damage. But obviously, I don't know if I'm in the minority, but I'm not in the majority. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But I don't see anything changing in the very near future. We're just going to have to get used to the idea. A lot of things that we need to get used to that people are refusing to accept right now.
And one of those guys seems to be Nebraska head coach Scott Frost. He'll just take his Huskers somewhere else, he said yesterday before the news broke, and maybe he will. And You know, I guess I'm glad it's Scott Frost in some place not real near to me, because I'm afraid anytime I see somebody, Hub, whose opinion I value, somebody I've had respect for over the years, I'm afraid of what these coaches are going to say during these times, because I'm wondering how many of these guys at the highest levels of college football remain morally sound human beings anymore. I fear there are very few remaining guys like that.
Well, you know, Mac, I know what you're saying, and I hope that there's more than very few. I think there are. I think people tend to kind of internalize this and make it very personal, and there's really nothing personal about it. And, you know, they worry about their own careers and futures. I mean, that's Scott Frost soundbite. I didn't see the whole interview, but I certainly have seen the part you're talking about several times. It's embarrassing, you know, and he's a good football coach, and I'm guessing he's probably a good human being, you know, but I don't understand how people can ignore the dangers here, you know, and the damage that it's doing, and the simple reality that no matter how you want to spin it, there's only one way to fix this, and that's to go through the pain, and that's everybody, not just some of us, and you know, it kind of defies explanation to me as why so many people are having such a hard time getting on the right page on this whole thing.
Because people choose their own set of facts, Hub.
Yeah, I mean, Daddy, I know. It's really unfortunate that we've reached a point where we can't have intelligent conversation based on actual facts and science without people turning it into politics. And you know, I mean, to me, this should have nothing to do with politics. I don't care, you know, about whoever you want to throw stones at. I do worry about mine and my family's and my friends and my neighbors and my community's well-being. And our well-being sucks right now because we are not doing the things we have to do to take care of ourselves. And so I know it sounds like I'm going far afield from college football, but I don't know how else to answer the question. The reality is that excellent athletes in their late teens and 20s are susceptible to this disease. They are getting it. People are getting sick, not in the same percentages as maybe older and higher target, you know, demographics. But we shouldn't want to let that happen to anybody. So, let me try and bring it back to where you wanted to be. I think that there was an intelligent plan, which is that you postpone the fall, you go with this March and April season, which leads to a May playoff. It can still, for the draft-eligible players who want to have film at the right time before there's a draft. And that obviously assumes that by late winter, early next spring, that we do have at least treatments and diagnostics, if not a vaccine. That is the intelligent and scientific way to go, and hopefully people will come around to that school of thought, or they can just go with wiping out a season, and I don't think that's the end of the world either, but I don't want that any more than anybody else, you know, but these people that are just determined to plow forward, and I just, that part I don't get. I don't have a good answer for that.
Hub, it was unearthed earlier today, that conversation among Big Ten schools happened for the first time last night about the possibility of moving it back to the late winter, early spring. I find that unconscionable. We've been talking about that on the air for several months. How could they not have at least been having those conversations prior to last night?
Yeah, Mac, I don't know who the source is. I don't want to call anybody a liar, but I've been told by people in the conversations that they were having them, you know, weeks and a month ago or 2 months ago. So I, you know, at this point, you know, is this what Danny just said? People choosing to believe their own facts. I don't know, but I know of, again, sources who are part of the conversation who I was talking to about it 6 weeks ago. So I just don't know where a lot of this is coming from at this point.
Yeah. Again, Pete Thamel, who's very well sourced, said that the conversations that just started last night were talking about what to do with the teams if they move to the spring. What do you do with them in the fall? So, like, the logistical details of, hey, if we move him, what do we do with him in the short term? That was the stuff that just started to come up with last night, which is, I would still say, crazy and showing a lack of foresight. This is a league that it released its football schedule last week and then canceled its football and fall schedule today. Like, they have clearly not been on the same page as they've gone. And just to circle back around to your spring football point, Urban Meyer says he sees no chance of spring football happening. He thinks it's completely unrealistic to ask student athletes to play two seasons within one calendar year.
Well, yeah, and listen, I want to be clear. I'm not challenging Pete Thamel. I don't know him. As far as I know, he's a good reporter. The idea of having the spring season is a couple months old. Now, whether they discuss the actual logistics of it, that I don't know. You know, so I'm not challenging him in any way. I think the Urban Meyer's point, that probably is an issue. But let's not forget that a good number of the kids who play in the spring would be gone and not eligible for the fall. They were talking about an 8-game season in the spring. I think in answer to Meyer's concerns, you could certainly play another 8-game season in the fall. You could make it a 6-game season in the spring. There's obviously a lot of things you could do, you know, if you thought it was worthwhile. But I'm not arguing with Urban Meyer. I think the idea of college athletes playing as many as 26 games in one calendar year is absurd. But obviously there's ways to adjust that, you know, if in fact that's what you want to do. I don't know that a lost season, you just wipe this one out and start getting ready for next fall, is the end of the world. It would be unfortunate for everybody, but it may be the cards that we've been dealt.
We're talking to Hub Arkish, McNeil and Parkins on The Score. Hub, I said you could bet your mortgage that if the SEC, ACC, Big 12 follow the Big 10 and the Pac-12, and we have no college football in the fall, the NFL will swoop in and have weekly games on Saturday in prime time. Have you heard anything to indicate they're making plans for that?
No, I haven't, Danny, but part of that's because I wasn't looking there, to be honest with you. And you know, again, I don't think there's any question that four of the five are, the Pac-12 is going to follow suit. I think the SEC is the wild card here. And believe me, I'm not trying to be political, but when we look at the reality of where those schools are and that they do tend to lean more towards the political camps that have been trying to ignore this as opposed to deal with it, I suppose the SEC could try and plow forward. But it's interesting, you know, your question, if you think about it, you're assuming that college has to cancel, but the NFL goes ahead and plays. Now, they are two very different animals. You know, in the NFL, these are paid professionals, and there are millions of dollars at stake, not only for the leagues, which you have in college football, but also for the players. They may be willing to take more risk and see people get sick and possibly even worse. So I'm not saying that just because college is canceled that the NFL has to too, but the NFL does have to deal with the same realities and dangers of playing that college football does. And I get asked almost every hour on by somebody, what are the odds that there's the NFL season? And I think right now they obviously are committed. But, you know, multiple people are going to get sick. Some folks are going to get very sick. God forbid somebody dies. I don't know what the NFL's appetite for the sickness and the risk is. They're not there yet. You know, they're really on the front end of where baseball was. We don't know where baseball is right now as they try and figure out how the Cardinals have a season and hope that there's no other team outbreaks. So this is just kind of, it's the day-to-day ongoing developments. And I think, getting back to your question, though, Danny, if the NFL is playing and college isn't, yeah, I'm sure the NFL would do that. It'd probably be wise. You know, the networks would be all over them to do it. You'd get a lot more games with network broadcast, and it'd be a way to make up some of the revenue.
We are inching our way closer to a Bears padded practice Saturday. Is that right? The Bears are supposed to put pads on a fully padded practice Saturday, Hub. Fingers crossed, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to keep up with this, and it may be okay on Saturday. I know that the first media access is tentatively Monday, and I didn't think they'd have pads on before we got out there. But it's certainly close. If it's not Saturday, it's in the coming days. And it'll be interesting to see, Dan, you know, what they do in pads, because this is where, you know, everything so far has been done at distance. And that's the advantage that we've said all along that baseball has, that a lot of the game can be played at distance. None of football can. And so when they put on pads, do they immediately go to team drills, to blocking drills, to things like that? The impression I've gotten from listening to Matt Nagy and talking to other coaches is that they won't immediately jump into that. So they may put on pads and run around, but when they actually start playing this game, you know, face to face and breathing and you know, bleeding and sweating on each other, that's when the real risk starts to kick in. So whether that's going to happen on Saturday or not, I don't know.
Why do you expect David Montgomery to be the NFL's breakout offensive star this year?
I thought that I saw enough of him in his skill set last year to say that that ability is there. I think that with their refusal to add any other talent at all to the running back stable, that they feel that they're going to maximize him and Tariq Cohen. Talking to Charles London, the running backs coach last week, and asking the question, he pretty much acknowledged that Tariq Cohen is not a guy you can give the ball 18, 20 times to. So, you know, they say they like Ryan Nall. I want to believe that because I like Ryan Nall, but he was activated for 8 games last year and got 2 carries. It just seems like David Montgomery is going to be the focal point, not only of the running game, but as a receiver. They have a new run game coordinator. I think they're probably expanding the system around all of Montgomery's talents, and I think he's a guy that they hope to give 325, 350 touches. And, you know, with any improvement in the offensive line at all, I think he's got that kind of ability to be very productive.
Hub, Mark Grody posited that after listening to the coaches' Zoom calls over the weekend and the offseason, that Nick Foles has too many allies within the coaching staff for Mitch Trubisky to overcome that, even though he has been called the incumbent. I think that Nick Foles is going to be the coach's pick. Do you think the coaches are biased towards Nick Foles?
I don't have anything to base that on, Danny. I understand why Mark would think it. I understand why you think it. But I've got to give the coaches the benefit of the doubt and rely on what they've said to me and how they've answered questions. And if they insist it's going to be an open and fair competition, which they have said it is, because of the restrictions being, you know, placed on them with no preseason games and the limited things they can do in practice, there's virtually no way. I mean, there's a way, but it would be really a long shot for Foles to win the job that way. And so if in order for me to say that because of the coach's familiarity with Foles, he's going to get the job, then I'd have to take the next step and say, then they're lying about it being a fair and open competition. And I don't want to believe that. So, you know, I don't know. It's certainly possible. But if it is an open and fair competition, I don't see how Foles gets the opportunities to win the job on the field. Not to mention the fact that clearly Trubisky is going to have a better connection with receivers than Foles is, if for no other reason he's been playing with most of them for 2 years, and Foles has never played with any of them. So if that decision was made the day they traded for Foles, then you're probably right. But if they're being genuine about a competition, then I still think you have to assume Trubisky's the favorite.
If you're a betting man today, do you bet they open the year as scheduled on the 13th of next month against the Lions?
Wow. yeah, I think there's a possibility, a good possibility that'll happen because there are no preseason games and they are in such a controlled environment. And at this point, they have a chance to limit you know, the infections and the effects of it. The more they play football, the harder that's going to be. So, you know, I guess there's reasonable odds that they can get to opening day, what the odds are that they can get to week three or week five or week six. That I just don't know, Mac. And Danny, just to finish the other answer to your question, again, I'm talking opening day. I think there's a very reasonable chance that Foles wins the job by week three, week five, whatever it is, if Mitch doesn't improve. But on opening day, I don't see how they get there.
I guess I'm a little surprised by your skepticism that the NFL isn't totally prepared to just bulldoze full steam ahead through this. Like if the NBA and the NHL figured it out, and I understand that they have bubbles, and baseball has figured it out, why wouldn't the NFL, which feels like it's Teflon and owns a day of the week, like what indications do we have that 10 positive tests per team is going to have the NFL shutting down?
I don't, and that's what I'm saying. I think what I said, I just don't know what their appetite for risk is here. You know, I don't know how they're going to react to it when people start getting sick. And again, the comp is baseball because there's no bubble. The NHL and the NBA, they're doing things very differently. And we don't know where baseball is going to end up. I don't know how the Cardinals are going to get their 60 games in. Somebody told me the other day that they'd already caught the Marlins up. I don't know how they could have done that since there were almost no off days scheduled in, you know, and what if this happens with other teams? Now, maybe if it doesn't, if the Marlins and the Cardinals are the worst of it, then maybe they can. But then you still got the difference that baseball is played at a lot more distance than football is. So I'm not pretending to know, you know, whether there's going to be a 16-game NFL season, whether they start on time. I'm using my best logic like everybody else. And the one thing that I think we all do know is of the various sports, none of them are going to be more difficult to play without infection spreading than football because of the nature of the game. But then we get to this question of how much damage can the NFL ignore? How much will they say is okay? That I don't know. I have no idea what their appetite for that is going to be. What I dread, what I can't get over, is the reality that, you know, a lot of these coaches and staff folks aren't in the high risk. The word I want is escaping me. The worst demographic. And I just think it's a matter of time before a 60-something, you know, coach or staff member or somebody not only gets the virus but gets very sick and, God forbid, passes away. And if that happens, how do you justify continuing to play? That's the part I can't get my arms around.
Have you heard two quarterback rooms, by the way? So the backup doesn't run the risk of getting in. Yeah, I've heard them. I've heard discussions about the possibility of two separate quarterback rooms, so the starter and Plan B are never in contact with each other.
I have not heard. Now, I know that there are a number of teams that are keeping the third quarterback separate, but I have not heard that about one and two, at least okay. Not yet. That's not to say it's not going on. I know it's not the case with the Bears because I've heard a lot from Trubisky and Foles and coaches about their interaction and their communication.
Hub, thank you.
All right, guys, take care.
Thanks, Hub. You too.
That's Hub Arkish with us weekly on the McNeil and Parkins show. We got to put in some investment plays or some reckless wagers, however you want to term it. And we've got White Sox players reacting to what Dallas Keuchel said publicly and reportedly privately yesterday. It's McNeil and Parkins on the show.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Well, I mean, I would have liked to see the team play better tonight, especially after kind of a defeating loss last night with Giolito and Bieber going at it. I mean, we just came out flat, and I feel like we just stayed flat the whole game. You know, we got a lot of guys. You know, We got some guys coming out and taking professional at-bats, being professional on the mound and doing what it takes to win. We got some guys kind of going through the motions. So we need to clean a lot of things up.
Wow. So Dallas Keuchel, after the game last night, saying we got some guys going through the motions and some guys taking professional at-bats. I loved it. I thought it was leadership. I thought it was what the White Sox paid Dallas Keuchel for. They don't have a lot of guys in that room who have been to the postseason multiple times, who have World Series, who have been frontline guys on big-time teams and big-time games. And so if he sees something, he's going to call it out. But we learned today, Mac, that not only did he call out his team, he did it the right way. He did it in the locker room before he did it to the media. So to me, that's like leadership 101. I don't think White Sox fans should be too dispirited by what happened. I feel like that's a necessary growing pain for a young team trying to figure out what their identity is going
to
be.
Yeah, he's trying to wake some people up. They didn't make Tigers pitchers work very hard last night. That's for damn sure. The White Sox drew all of one walk last night. And we went around the panel earlier in the show after we played Keuchel's comments in lengthy form. And we came to the speculation, we came to our unscientific conclusion that he's talking specifically about Eloy Jimenez, who is batting .214 right now and has had his issues defensively. But we strongly suspect that could be where the finger is being pointed. But there could be other guys who, you know, Yasmani Grandal is not getting it done either. He's the highest paid player in team history. Start hitting the damn ball. He hasn't homered yet this year, and he's not been great defensively as well. Abreu is not having a great year. So, you know, it's still very early, but we set the bar high, and rightfully so, because they have a lineup that should score runs. When you score one run and Danny Mendick is the big reason you have any offense going. He's the only guy with a multi-hit night on the team last night, for crying out loud. And yet here I come back tonight and think, man, maybe they're a good play tonight at minus -125 against the Lions. Talking to Hub gets me thinking the Tigers.
Taking football. Anyway, the number keeps going up. Should have jumped on earlier. I think it's more than Eloy. I think it was more than just one game. Robert swings at everything he sees. Tanny pointed out Eloy with 8 pitches and seen in 4 at bats last night. Their walk rate is near the bottom of baseball. I think 27th, 28th in the sport. So they're
on
not
base
patient.
Percentage. Yeah, their on base percentage is bad. They only had one walk as a group. Grandal's the only guy who walked last night.
Yeah. So, but let's hear. That's how it's sitting, you know, with some of us in media or some fans. Let's hear how it's sitting in the clubhouse. James McCann and Tim Anderson both were asked today before the game about what Dallas Keuchel said privately and publicly.
I agree with everything Keuchel said, and I'll be the first one to tell you that he didn't go through the media and say it. I mean, he said it to everyone's face in the clubhouse. So, first off, that's a sign of a leader. He's going to address what he how he feels and what he sees to the team, and not try and do it through the media. And with that being said, he's exactly right. There, even in a 162 game season, there has to be a sense of urgency. If you go through the motions, you're going to end up looking up in September and chasing the team in first place. And it's even more important this year in a 60 game season. There has to be a sense of urgency. Does that mean you're going to win every game? No, but you have to have that sense of urgency and not the, you know, not just going through the motion. But first off, I think it was received great. The way he went about it, the way that he, no one was singled out. It was a team type comment. And yeah, it was really the first, you know, full team you know, kind of gut check, and it couldn't have come from a better guy or at a better time.
Nothing really, you know. What he said is cool. You know, like you said, he is a pitcher. You know, I just take those words and, you know, I use those to motivate me. You know, because he is my pitcher. I do play defense behind him. And for a pitcher to tell me that we're not taking professional at bats, I take that to heart. So, you know, I'm going to use it as motivation. But all good energy, all positive energy. You know, nothing against him. Somebody had to say it. So I think it was the right time for him to say it. And, you know, the guys get it. And it's okay. It's okay. So hopefully we go out and compete harder tonight. And, you know, like I said, hopefully light a match under some guys and get them going. Especially coming for a pitcher, like you said.
Mac, who knows in a weird season like this for a young team with all the injuries that they have? Like maybe no words or meetings will matter with just how undermanned they are. And yeah. Nothing, no match can make up for, you know, 60% of your starting rotation being out. But that it might be a catalyst moment. It seems like it was well received and a good thing for the White Sox.
The watershed moment of 2020. The
exactly.
Night Dallas Keuchel ripped everybody a new ass. Yeah, that's what it's always going to be after that 17th game of the year when Dallas lit them all up. They'll all point back to that. Look, you're going to have some bad nights. You're going to have nights when you're just not getting it done offensively and pitchers get the better of you. But those at-bats where they're not working pitchers and they're not, you know, taking pitches that are off the plate. They're swinging at everything. That's what's got to stop. But hopefully tonight there's a different turn of events because I'm ready to stop the bleeding. I'm ready to go back to that White Sox team that we were talking about when we were all together last on Friday afternoon heading into the weekend series against the Indians. We were feeling all right about these White Sox. And then Zach Plesac had to do – oh, and how about Zach Plesac? We have yet to address his whereabouts.
Well, I talked about it yesterday, but yeah, it was
Saturday night. Did you?
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
I don't know where he was. By the way, several people have asked me where was he. I don't know. I'm leaving the police acts alone. They have been shamed.
That's what it was. It was a public shaming. It was like that scene of Game of Thrones when they just walk by and shame.
Yeah.
It was a flogging. and then Clevinger, I got to be honest, I read the headline and I didn't read the story until Tanny alerted me of the details. So bad job, very millennial job by me glossing over it. It's not normally my style. So Clevinger was out with Plesac and Clevinger defended Plesac for, yeah, he's not a bad guy, don't worry about him. Then they and he flew back with the team. And then they found out that he was out too, and so now they scratched him from the start for punishment and quarantine. Like,
yeah, that's why,
dude,
yeah.
Like you could have been the whole cause of the breakout. Like, you, what are you doing? That's such a ridiculous. Like, when they say, "Oh, we get it, we're following the protocols," because we played the audio from Plesac on our show on Friday, talking about the commitment to it, and guys have to buy in and understand, and it's about more than just individuals and all that stuff. Like, those actions show you really don't get it.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah, just momentarily didn't care. You get it, but you don't care. You suspend what you get because you want to celebrate.
Yeah, and it's not even
let being 25 get the best of him, no doubt.
Yeah, and I get the urge to go out and celebrate and all of that. I'm saying from Clevinger's standpoint, like, okay, Plesac's back in his hometown. He made a mistake. He saw his friends, but he took his medicine. Yeah. Clevinger's like, I stand by Zach Plesac.
Oh,
now let me board
fella.
This confined space with recirculated air and all of my teammates.
But, and that's the reason Adam Plutko gets the ball tonight against the Cubs for the Indians. It was supposed to be a Clevinger's start, though. So the Cubs get a break there because that Indian staff, though, man, that is a very, very good pitching staff, and they didn't really do anything to stop where the hideous numbers they had posted going into the weekend, that kept going.
Yeah.
This team has been terrific. Best in baseball.
Sox fans get to be big Cubs fans for a while.
Huge Cubs guy tonight. Let's go. Hey, did you know Cleveland's where they won the World Series in 2016? Not a lot of people know that.
That's true. Oh, Tanny, that's why you're around here. That's very, very
I did
valuable.
Some number crunching, yeah.
Yeah, he did some right. Yeah, that's very impressive.
The Indians' Twitter account also alerting people like, yes, we know we blew a 3-1 lead to the Cubs. We're being proactive about it, so don't mention it to us.
Oh, well, so someone will bring it up on social media one or two times, I'm sure, over the course of these games. Speaking of some good lines around the White Sox, Ozzie Guillen, Mac, it feels like every third day he says something that I feel is relevant enough, relevant, some might say, to play on this show because it's just wildly entertaining. Here's Ozzie doing Ozzie things on Don Cooper on NBC Sports Chicago.
Who else is hurt? Rodon, Lopez, Anderson, Madrigal.
My heart is hurt. That's the worst.
Bummer, Lambert. Don Cooper's hurt. Don Cooper is out for the whole series. He has arthroscopic surgery. Everyone's hurt.
How about Don Cooper? Stay home. Okay. You told me, if Don Cooper had heart problem, or so, he got a knee problem. Coop, I saw you walking. You take 2 hours to get to the mound, then you got to lose some weight. That, put the camera on my man right here. He's laughing. He loves it. I just
it was funny. It was a funny line.
And Cooper's my boy, but you know, when the pitching coach missed day, I'd rather Cooper be out than Lopez and
Rodon. You need Rodon. Him.
Yeah, right, Cooper, right. I need those pitchers. That will help me.
All right. I'm just.
Gonna, can, I have nobody nothing. Here can talk. No, everybody in the studio's laughing.
All right.
Ozzie's the best.
Coop's got a knee, and it's too heavy.
It takes too long to get out to the mound. And I like Ozzie being like, hey, look, people are laughing at my joke. He's like, show everybody laughing at my joke on camera. Don't just show me. Show that people thought that was funny. That's the sign of a true performer. Ozzie Guillen has been a home run on NBC Sports.
Turns out
Chicago.
Zach Plesac wasn't the only Indian starter who went out with friends in Chicago on Saturday. Ozzie, Mike Clevinger went out with him as well. Both are being punished and quarantined by the Indians. What do you think?
And good for baseball. Then they know they shouldn't be better. But by the way, I know who they went with.
You do?
Yes.
You knew who they went out with.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. There is a tease. Maybe we'll talk about this on the postgame show tonight.
Ozzie's been doing some sleuthing on the Cleveland Indians.
Whatever. I know every bar and every restaurant in this town. Yes, indeed, because most of the restaurants eat for free. That's why I know everyone.
Oh, my gosh.
We ought to go out to eat with him.
I'm not going out to eat with anybody.
God, Benetti's the best. Oh, that's so good. So, I mean, Ozzie could have broken a little bit of a scoop there, but he's no snitch. That's good. He's not passing along the information.
Yeah. You know, and I have to say good for baseball, too. Good for the Cleveland Indians for disciplining a couple of their better ball players, a couple of their better pitchers. You guys are not above the rules. We are going to sit you. And you are going to learn from this. That's not always how it works in the star system. Sometimes guys get away with that. I was actually pleasantly surprised to see the Indians send Zach home.
I said the same thing. They made an example of him. Now, he might not need to miss a start just based on how starting pitching works and the amount of time that they're quarantining him for. But they could have kept that discipline in-house, and they didn't. So they deserve some level of credit for that, and that was an embarrassing thing. Like, when the next time he speaks, he'll have to fall on the sword for it and face the music and answer those questions. So that was, I'm sure, a learning moment for him, but I agree with you. In terms of professional accountability for superstar athletes, you don't always see it that way, so I agree with you. Good job by the Indians organization. All right, the Hawks' chances heading into tonight as they start a much tougher series with the Golden Knights, plus some investment opportunities coming up on The Score.
I think a lot of people in the media and so-called, you know, hockey experts and analysts were probably picking Edmonton as well. So we kind of felt like the underdog in that series. So, you know, it's a cool role to play. I think it's exciting for our team when everyone's kind of counting you out and no one's really giving you a chance. So, you know, like Johnny said, I think Vegas is a really good hockey team. Just from watching them in games here during their round robin, they're very detailed, very structured. And it's going to be a tough test for us. And I think we know that as a team. So, you know, we really need to stick to our game plan and play that way. But I think all of us in our locker room are excited about the challenge and excited about the underdog role.
That's Patrick Kane. Puck drop tonight. Hawks and Knights. They're officially in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Rangers got the number one pick, so no more lottery dreams for the Hawks. Now it's about seeing if they can shock everyone and make a run against the Stanley Cup champs, one of the most talented teams in the sport, one of the deepest teams in the sport, and a matchup with an old friend, Robin Lehner. Hawks are 2.5-1 dogs, plus 250 on the money line. So bet 100 pays you out 250 if they win the series. You give them much of a shot, Mac?
I always give a team a shot in a hockey series. Sure, I'm not betting the series, however. I typically don't do that. We get to the Cup Final, I will, or maybe the Western Conference Final, should they advance that far. Or maybe I'll bet the Las Vegas Golden Knights in the Stanley Cup Final, if that's what my choice will be. But for tonight's game, there are six NHL playoff games tonight, six quarterfinal round games. And the Blackhawks are the only over. Their total with Las Vegas is 6.5. There's one other total at 6. Several of them are 5.5, and there's one, I think it's the Dallas game, where it's 5 for the total in the game. So you expect a lot of goals to be scored. But, yes, Robin Lehner getting the start in goal for Peter DeBoer's Golden Knights tonight. Marc-Andre Fleury, who is 5th all-time, is the backup. That's not a bad ace to have up your sleeve. I don't know if Marc-Andre Fleury is as good as he was years ago. I would think his skills have diminished somewhat. I mean, he's up there in years, but I'm going to play the over tonight, and I'm going to take the Hawks at plus 165. We hit 3 out of 4 when we played them in the first round. We forgot to get in on one of them. So I'm gonna play the over with our money tonight. We have a bank of just a little bit less than $1,800. So with wishful thinking, we will move on the Hawks tonight as well as the over. Unless you want to talk me out of one or both of them.
No, I would never talk Big Chief Mack Hawk out of it, and I know you won't bet on bet against the Hawks, so that takes Vegas out of it. So if you want to have action on the game, you're going to be betting the Hawks or the over. I definitely think how the Hawks have defended and Corey Crawford's inconsistency leads to me feel like there's going to be goals allowed. So that is a good indication for the over, because the Hawks have enough firepower, I think, to hang with a lot of teams. So overs came in the first series. Until proven otherwise, I see no reason to not continue to ride that wave, because, you know, everyone thought that it got real high, right? It got to 6.5, which is as high as you'll see a hockey total against Edmonton. So they restart, new series, new expectation. Again, deeper team for the Golden Knights. So let's see if the trend continues. I'm fine with an overplay. Betting on the Hawks feels a little homerish to me.
Yeah, sure,
frankly.
It is. Of course, but it is. But we don't bet many dogs. So, I mean, a plus 165, we'll put a little something in that. Did you see Richard Deitch's tweet a little while ago on hockey ratings for the qualifying round games?
It was the top 10, right?
Top 10, and I would have expected Chicago to do a little better. Chicago wound up with the 9th highest rating of the cities involved. Las Vegas and Pittsburgh were tied for the top rating during qualifying round of a 1.4. Chicago was a 0.64, just ahead of Denver and slightly behind Boston.
Yeah, I mean, those, I guess I would have thought maybe a little higher, but they're a 12 seed. The games were so late. And they were on, they weren't on Big Boy NBC. They were on NBC Sports Chicago. So that's gonna impact some of those ratings, just to skew all of them lower.
The first game was on Big Boy NBC.
Okay, so
yeah, just the first game of the series. I think that was it. I think everything else was Pat and Eddie.
Yeah, those were aggregate ratings, right? So they were. So yeah, I think there were a lot of factors there. And like, Pittsburgh is always going to be right at the top. It just the markets that love hockey that also have better teams. My guess is what'll happen here is that if the Hawks play well in this series, we'll start to feel around town a little bit more of the buzz. Not I don't think it'll be 13 or 15 type buzz. This team isn't that good, and people aren't out and about in the same way to kind of congregate and just enjoy it together. Like the Hawks became a thing, right? It became a go to the bar, wear your gear, civic pride, like you were wearing a baseball hat. It became wear your Hawks gear for civic pride for Chicago. There's not as many people just going out and repping gear and being together right now. So it doesn't feel like the buzz is the same for a team that got into the playoffs on a technicality after being 32-38-8.
Yeah, I agree with you. It'd be silly to suggest that you're wrong. I mean, I'm just saying
that's reflected in those ratings, right? There's a lot of reasons why those numbers are not that impressive based on Blackhawks playoff standards.
You deserve what you get.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's another late one tonight. Like, I don't know what the Hawks did to keep, you know, I mean, I understand they played Edmonton and they played Vegas, so they're kind of catering to some of those markets too. But so, man, can we get a 7 o'clock puck drop, please? Can we get a normal start time for a hockey game?
Edmonton, Alberta, I believe, is on Mountain Time Zone as well. They're 1 hour behind us, so you're going to lose an hour regardless. I think at least 1 hour behind us. They might even be two.
No, I know, and I that's what I'm saying. So but both Vegas and Edmonton, obviously west of us in terms of the time zones and catering to the teams that are the higher seeds and all of that. So I get why it's happening, but I mean in the first round, other than the weekend game, the first game that was 2 or 2:30, it's like every game it required this marathon session of staying up. So that's going to impact Chicagoans being totally invested and bought in on it as well, but.
And the Cubs and Sox were hot at the same time, too.
Oh, yeah. Hey, man, get back into it with the Cubs tonight. Let's go.
John Lester hasn't touched the ball in 9 days when he pitched pretty well against the Pirates. Went 6 innings, struck out 4, walked only 1, allowed a run on 4 hits. I think John Lester is a nice play tonight. And basically, it's a pick 'em. It's a minus 110 each way. So, I'm going to go ahead and play John Lester and the Cubs to do a little hurt dance on those reckless Cleveland Indians tonight.
Okay. So I'm looking forward to the first time you bet against one of the locals. You've been riding them, and that's fine. I'm the only bets I'm making in my personal life. I've made a few golf plays, and my nephew is 9-2 on the NBA restart. He has no plays for today, so he's showing tremendous discipline for a 14-year-old gambler. It's very impressive. He asks me what line I have stuff at, what number I have stuff at, and then if I bring it back to him and it's not what he had, he says, never mind, I'll wait for the next one. He's taken a couple of days off recently. He apologized after his second loss of the restart. I'm like, Jack, You're 8-2. You do not need to apologize. And then he took a day off, came back, hit the over in the Lakers game last night to move to 9-2. And it's just ridiculous. This kid, he just plays video games and watches the NBA and stays up all night. Like I wake up to text messages with him just like crowing about the NBA bets that he's won when I've fallen asleep and I'm not watching West Coast NBA because the playoffs haven't started yet. It's amazing. I'm very proud of my nephew. 9-2,
he's at the perfect age for a pandemic.
He really is. I know. I said that to Brad.
It's Shep like, says let's go under on the Cubs and leave John Lester alone.
Oh, okay.
Total is 9. And you've accused me of being a homer, and you're 100% accurate. So, all right, well, we'll lay off the Cubs and we'll go under. You agree with Shep, or do you think there's going to be a ton of runs scored tonight?
John Lester always scares me. I've been predicting his demise for 2+ seasons. So,
well, how do you feel about Adam Plutko?
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts about Adam Plutko, Mac, but we just don't have enough time to get into all of them. If Shep has a lean towards the under, I think the idea of what they're facing is obviously people are going to play if they lose or they're rusty or they, you know, only have a couple of hits or have, you know, 14 strikeouts as a team or something, they'll be the Cardinals and the Rust really, you know, knocked the Cubs out of their rhythm. This is going to be a weird year. That you got to just – if they come out and they score 6 runs tonight, then it didn't matter. I don't like that retroactive analysis. You get 4 games off before the division series starts. You get 4 games – or 4 days off before the division series. You get 4 days off for an all-star break. It's it's not ridiculous or unprecedented for these guys to have a few days off of a break and then go play baseball again. So no excuses in a short season. Go out there and do your best. Like, I'm fine with the under, but I honestly don't have a strong lean either way.
All right, I put $75 on the under, and I put $75 on the over in the Hawks game, and we have a White Sox game yet to play here. Sox are a favorite.
No, thanks.
Yeah, can't say that I love that. But Tim Anderson is back in the lineup, so there's that. But I can't advocate betting on Gio Gonzalez. If you want to say that they're going to score some runs and not just strike out a lot, I can talk myself into that because I think Gio Gonzalez is always good for a four spot. But
yeah, you got a big ballpark and a contact pitcher in Gio Gonzalez. I don't know how I like that one.
So you like the under?
Well, no, I'm just saying I don't like the Sox to win tonight.
Oh, okay.
You want to know
the Tigers, Mac? If we got Tanny not confident, host of the Lockdown Sox podcast, let's bet against the local team for once.
But I'm often wrong, almost
exclusively. Consider it done. I do it reluctantly, but it's done. I got 75 on the Tigers. Done. $375 plays.
All right, I like it. Tanny, don't worry. You fit in with the rest of us and the rest of sports gamblers who are wrong almost exclusively. It's a very difficult way to make a living. Fun show today, Mac. Glad to have you back. We had Daniel Negreanu on the show, Vegas Golden Knight fan and Hall of Fame poker player. He was on at 3:30. Hub Arkish joined us at 4 o'clock. Obviously, tons of reaction to the news of the Big Ten and Pac-12 being canceled, while the Big 12, SEC, and ACC pushes back their decision. Thank you to Herb Lawrence for helping us out throughout all of the Scorantine shows. This is Scorantine number 107. Nick Shepkowski is our executive producer. Thank you, sir. Chris Tannehill makes us sound better than we are each and every day. For Mac, I'm Parkin. Zach Zabin coming up next on The Score.
And that'll basically be the show because we don't have much time for anything else. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, 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 O'Reilly.